Steve from Marin County.
Hi, I'm Joan. I'm an alcoholic. I wasn't nervous until I actually walked into this room. And I don't know why, because this has been such an uplifting day. I mean, it's a shame that the conference is only once a year, and I'm sure that you all agree with me that this is just like, wham, an instant fix, and it's great. And, I mean, where else are you going to find this? And it's great. And so my topic is making amends. And this is really, this is the first time I ever spoke without, like, having to qualify, so bear with me if I'm mumbling. Making amends for me is something that has been not an easy chore. I'm very much into ego at any given time, hence the reason for making amends. And very self-absorbed, and self will run riot, you know, a lot of the time that causes these situations that need amending. And having to walk through those situations, admit my own behavior, admit my faults, and move forward from there, and going up to another individual or an institution and state my business and apologizing for wronging people is a scary act, as I'm sure some of you, if not most of you, have experienced. But it's an incredible rush to know that you are walking into a situation that you can admit your part in and walk away knowing that you did the best you can to amend the damage that's been created. At least that is true for me. And there's a part in the big book that says we are one of God's children. We don't crawl before anyone. That was a very hard part for me to get down, because I was a worthless bag of shit. And I knew that. I mean, you can't tell me any different. I am a bag of shit, and self-esteem is something that was very lacking for many, many years in the beginning of my sobriety. And so going and approaching people with a sincere attitude of I'm sorry, and a sincere yearning to make right the wrongs that I had created was very painful, because that meant that I needed to take a look at a lot of issues that I had that needed self-esteem. I needed to come from a place that I knew that I had grown. I needed to have peace of mind, and these were things that were all very foreign to me. And when I'm making amends, I look back at situations and I see that it is still the same thing. When I'm making amends, it is because of damage that I've created, and whether it's making amends to an individual, an institution, or amending behavior, it means that I'm letting go of something that I've created negative stuff with and I've carried around. And so it's a very enlightening experience all the way around. And getting the opportunity to do that, because I have a faith in a higher power, because I have a sponsor that helps me work these steps continually, reverting back to step 9 when needed, gets easier. And the first time around, it was scary as hell. And each time amends are made, it's easier for me to see my part in things. It's easier for me to say, oh, I see. Yes, that was me. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to live like that. I don't want to say those things anymore, whatever the case is. And it comes in every aspect of my life, whether I'm dealing with children, whether I'm dealing with adults, whether I'm dealing with merging traffic on the freeway. It makes a profound impact. And a few giggles with merging traffic, but that is very clear to me that if I am doing this in one part of my life, chances are I'm doing it in others. And I need to take a look at that. Why am I allowing myself to do this to someone that can't even hear me? Well, that's really great. That's really great. You know, and where else is that affecting in my life? Okay, so. Point being, exactly. But sticking close to a power greater than myself, sticking close to the fellowship, working the steps on a continuous basis, is what makes my life easier, and hence those around me. Because when I am close with my God, when I am close to my sponsor, and close to the people in the fellowship and going to meetings, that's when life is going well for me, and the need for amends becomes a lot clearer and a lot less frequent because I am living life on life's terms, and I am much more willing to take things as they come, and I am much more willing to see my part in things and acknowledge the fact that, yes, I have character defects, and yes, they will arise, but there's also a really good side to me, and I get to be able to share that with other individuals, and I get to have that part of me grow because of these rooms and these conferences and people like all of you. Thanks.
Our next speaker is Janine S. from Marin.
Hi, everybody. I'm Janine, and I am an alcoholic. And, you know, I'm sick today, and I've been here at this conference, like, actually most of the day I stayed home this morning, so I saved some energy, but I've been walking around. I haven't been able to hug anybody. And, you know, it's the weirdest thing to be at an AA function and not be able to hug anybody. It's just odd. So I feel kind of strange about that. So I just thought I'd share that. I'm going to talk about the promises right there. And I think I'll just stick to this because I have 10 minutes. On page 83 and 84, like it says, my sponsor, who I love dearly, I've been with her for quite a few years now, has the women she sponsors do this exercise where we sit and we write out how the promises have come true for us. And it's sort of along the lines of a gratitude list, remember those? we used to do those a lot when I was newly sober. So it says here that if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. If we're painstaking, that means that we have an earnest desire to set right the wrongs that we've committed. And for me, the amazement came in that I suddenly was incorporating in my thought process like new ideas, like instead of how I could screw somebody over to get drugs or money from them, how I could contribute to life. And that was amazing to me. It says, we are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. For me, after making my amends, or when I was actually sharing with somebody before the meeting that I'm sure there are still names on my original nine-step amends from 1988 who I still have not made amends to today. But what I found is that when I went out in the world and I started doing this footwork, I started making appointments with people and sitting down and telling the truth with my head held high that I could walk down the street, you know, and not sort of have to look at the ground and shrug my shoulders over and sort of hide from the world. I could just walk down the street. And that was freedom for me. Also, suddenly I discovered that I had this different idea of the future. You know, always when I was out there, I was sort of always hoping that I could just find some poor slob that would marry me, you know, somebody who was stupid enough to ask me to marry him, and I would, you know, take care of him, and he'd take care of me, and I'd drink for the rest of my life. And that was my hope for my future at 19 years old. I mean, I found that when I part of making my amends was also making amends to myself. You know, I went back to school, I did some things that sort of gave me some hope about the future, that I could become a complete woman, you know, without some poor slob who would marry me. So what happened was I was with a boyfriend when I was working these steps who was very abusive, would come to the halfway house where I was, shit-faced, drunk, on drugs, whatever, and it was hard for me to get out of the sort of prison that relationship was, you know, and because I was had an earnest desire to set right the wrongs I had committed, I was able to be free of that relationship. It was not a happy, love-filled relationship, and so I discovered that freedom by getting out of that relationship. Also, another freedom was that I became self-supporting through my own contributions. I was able to get a job and show up for work on a daily basis, and an immense amount of freedom came with that. Let's We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. This I still struggle with today. I have four little brothers who really caught the brunt of a lot of my alcohol and drug abuse, and I was not a good sister to them. And I was abusive to them when I was hungover or when I was drunk. For them just to see me in that state, I think, was abusive. And so the guilt and the shame of that, you know, still I have to contend with that today. Sometimes I do want to shut the door on that. And I see my brothers behaving in ways today that remind me of what I was like. And I, you know, there's that twinge of, oh, my God, I'm somehow responsible for that, you know. So I try to really let go of that. I began to see how my experience could benefit others. And how that happened for me was that I showed up to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I heard other women share about shameful, horrific, you know, things that they had done, how they just had been the worst sluts, and how they had stolen and lied and cheated. And, you know, those were good things for me to hear once in a while at meetings, you know, because it kept me coming back, and it made me realize that I wasn't alone anymore. You know, for so long I thought that I was the biggest bag of shit, and nobody in the world was, you know, anywhere near the low-level pond scum that I was. So it was really important for me to have that experience. And now I have the honor of listening to other women's fifth steps sometimes, and I hear the things that they have to say, and I can relate. You know, if I can't match that exact experience, I either know someone who can or am able to relate a similar experience. I've tried to lose my interest in selfish things and gain interest in others. I am a largely self-centered person. You know, that's my disease. I like to think about myself. Although, you know, I'm a student. I'm a nursing student here. I'm about to sit for my boards here pretty soon. And so, you know, I couldn't have done that if I didn't learn how to have a sincere and honest interest in other people's well-being. And so that's been probably the greatest gift of my sobriety, is that I can either help someone die or help them get better, you know, whichever the case may be. And I do genuinely have an interest in other people today. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. How am I doing? I think I have 5 minutes. I hope. 4 minutes. Okay, I'm halfway done. Doing good. We're on six. It says, we will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. And when I used to hear this Thomas Rhett, I just used to think, oh, shit, serenity, oh, my God, you know, I've never had a serene moment in my life. My head doesn't shut up for a minute. And what it says here is that we will comprehend the word. The word serenity. If you don't have a dictionary, go buy one. Look up the word serenity, and you're done with that part of this poem. It does not say you will be serene. Okay, so all that is required, okay, like I said, is a dictionary. To be serene means to be undisturbed. I hope, I don't think I should live in this world that we live in today if I'm not disturbed. So there's a lot of disturbing things that happen in this world, you know. So I'd like to be serene and I'd like to have peace, but I don't ever want to completely be undisturbed. Oh, there's a bumper sticker that says, what does it say? Somebody must know. I don't know, something about if you're not pissed off, you're not paying attention or something like that. What is it? Has anyone seen that bumper sticker? Please tell me you have. Okay, thank you. Anyway, so I'm disturbed sometimes. Outraged. Well, yeah, I had to swear, you know, couldn't get through talking about swearing. But it also says that we will know peace, you know, and I've had moments where I felt that calm inside and where I felt sort of this alignment with God or this good spirit or whatever it is that you call it. That's what I call it. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. when I was new, I sort of had this mindset that I was a loser and I couldn't do anything right ever. The reason that this promise came true for me is that I started to take commitments, and I would show up and I would make myself useful. So that feeling of uselessness sort of slipped away in action. You know, I would show up and I would do something, and so I was no longer useless. And sometimes I'm a little too useful today. I feel, all right, everybody just listen to me. I'm the older child, you know. And I like to run the show. You know, if everyone would just listen to me, it would be fine. Today, I really don't have much reason for self-pity. It's really hard for me to work myself into a good self-pity. You know, maybe once or twice a year I can spend the day in bed with a comforter pulled over my head and self-pity, but it doesn't really work too well. Our whole attitude and outlook on life will change. For me, I was a very negative person, just naturally. You know, I think I was born with that kind of a negative, it'll never work attitude, you know. And I always wore black for about, I think, the first 2 years I was sober, I wore black. And anybody who's in this room who remembers me from then can attest to this, but I wore black forever. And I can remember that as my attitude and outlook on life started to change, I've graduated to brown now. But my wardrobe kind of brightened up with my attitude, you know, and people commented on it, and I just thought, you know, what an apple. I look good in black. You know, I couldn't believe when people were coming, oh, it's great to see you wearing something besides black, and I just thought, God, that's not very nice, you know. Black is slimming, you know, it's a great color. I still love it, but I don't have to wear it all the time anymore. So it's nice today to be able to live in a world that's a little brighter and to not always look like I'm going to a funeral. Fear of people. Has not left me. You know, I'm not real good about that. I still don't like to get close to anybody. I don't want to share my innermost feelings with you. And, you know, I'm working on that. I have a small support group. I have like a handful of like six people that I really trust and rely on, you know, and I know I should expand my support group, and I don't, you know. So that's one thing that I still need to work on. Economic insecurity. It says the fear of economic insecurity will leave us, not, you know, economic insecurity. Otherwise, we'd all be rich, right? And I still have huge money issues, you know. I don't drink anymore. I don't smoke anymore. I don't do drugs anymore. I don't act out sexually anymore. I don't binge on food anymore, you know, but I have money issues. It's the only thing left, you know, for God's sake. The 11th promise is we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. Like, you have 2 minutes to hurry up and finish this. I've really learned to listen to that intuition, you know, that inner voice, because I've always been sorry when I have not listened to that inner voice. And it really comes in handy in my job today when people are sick and need some kind of medical attention. I know when something is not right with one of my patients just by looking at them. And if I didn't have that intuition, then I wouldn't be able to do my job the way I can. So then we suddenly realize that God is doing for us that we could not, what we could not do for, I can't talk, what we could not do for ourselves. You know, the bottom line is that I should be dead, and I'm not. You know, I've been clean sober for a few years now, and I'm sitting here in front of you, and the amount of drugs that I've done, and the amount of alcohol I've ingested, and how many car accidents I've had sort of add up to this idea that I shouldn't be sitting here today. So I get to be a good friend, I get to contribute to society, and I get to be a good sister and a good daughter today. And it's really an honor to be here today and to be the woman of this fellowship. And thanks for letting me share.
And thank you, Janine. Our last speaker is Mary Beth M. from Marin County.
Hi, I'm Mary Beth. I'm an alcoholic. And I love the combination of topics that this meeting puts together. And I think that And one thing I really love about the 12 steps is the way it gives me an outline and a kind of a sequence about a way to live life. And I think there's an important reason why we need to talk about amends in relationship to the promises in a daily retreat. And for me, that's about that part of the way that I get to my highest spiritual experience is to look at what is making me close my heart, what is the critical voice still hanging around in my head, you know, where are the places that I go into kind of a grabbing mentality, that I have a dear friend and colleague who talks about there's enough to go around. There's enough to go around. We do a piece of work together called a dating workshop. And I have a little background story on that. I just got married this year. And I got sober when I was 18 years old. And in a couple months, I'm going to be 40. Mm-hmm. And so, that's, coming up on 22 years of days to show up and see up and try to have a relationship with other human beings and try to have a relationship with me that is, you know, me getting in touch with what my soul is here to do and what my purpose is on the planet, and that's, I really do believe that's what the steps are about. And in part of, in telling me about my friend saying there's enough to go around, part of this also means 21 years of staying sober and not being married. So that means staying sober in every configuration of unmarried things that people do. And in the last year, Just last year, I met my husband, and I decided that if my husband was 1 in 100, I was going to go on 100 dates. So it was real dates, real, you know, go out, do something, kiss at the door, go home. And I met my husband on my 76th date. And out of that particular long stretch of, you know, despair, you know, all the relationships we went before, and then the real, okay, I'm rolling up my sleeves, I'm doing footwork, and then really meeting my soulmate. I mean, this man is remarkable now. And it's, you know, in the fellowship for 15 years, and if he's done his work, he's just an amazing human being. But out of that suffering, we, you know, you get to, in my, I'm quite fair, in my business, you get to go, okay, now I get to teach, you know, what I'm learning. So in the dating workshop, we do that. But that's one of the lines she said, was there's enough to go around. And I thought, man, that's the antithesis of addiction for me. that's the baseline of sobriety that's got a sort of an emotional maturity to it. That feeling of is probably, you know, one of the most immediate triggers for my defect. And I was just sitting here thinking that, you know, between being 18 and, you know, having a couple of days of sobriety and getting ready to turn 40 and, you know, having another year of sobriety, I thought my definition of amends has probably changed. It's not so much like a wreckage of active using and drinking past. For me today, so much as it is showing us and telling the truth about that. Because it's still, each of those little, you know, like it really hurt my feelings when this happened, that turns into a resentment and then a disconnect and a separation that's just so time consuming. You have to kind of bring oneself back from all that. It's really something streamlined, I think, when I can operate from that 10th step, like promptly admit, you know, promptly admit. An example of like how that works for me is my husband went back to school. So he's, after we have this 4 month bliss new marriage honeymoon, he's not available on the weekend to play with. And he told me last night we're sitting at dinner and said, I can't, you know, see you till Sunday, I've got to do my homework. And my whole self went, you know, I just felt so disappointed. It's like I'm all alone again. And then I was like, why am I even married? And then I just didn't feel like talking to him. And this is like in the span of like a couple minutes. and my amends today were to say, you know what, I felt so disappointed when you said that. I just felt really sad. And but I understand doing what you need to do for you. What I was actually talking about in my home group meeting earlier this morning, that my work in recovery right now has to do with navigating my way through having needs, letting people matter enough to me that they are irreplaceable, that I have a need. It's not a blanket need anymore. I think, you know, my first couple of years of sobriety, it's just like, Jesus, people. You know, it's Christmas, I need to be with people. Any group of sober people will do. And then, you know, you get more discriminating as time passes. Like, you know, I want somebody I have history with. I want a particular person to do a particular thing with. That's what intimacy is. So that's the fertile ground for being disappointed. You know, when I have a particular need and this person is going to be unwilling or unable to show up for me. And my work in recovery is being able to tolerate feeling disappointed without rejecting this person, without saying, you don't matter, without checking out, you know, to just feel like a little lost kid and tell the truth and then say, you know what, I gotta reach out to some new people and have some new people to play with. You know, I gotta create some new irreplaceable people. So that's what amends look like to me today. It's tell the truth back. And a sign for me when I'm needing to make amends or have a conversation with somebody about what's going on in my relationship. When I'm driving around the car and I'm talking to somebody who isn't there. That means, you know, I'm starting to, like, you know, accumulate some stuff. And I believe the purpose of all of that is to it's something I am totally committed to, is to, I only have relationships with people who are equally committed to having relationships that are clean. Mm-hmm. Life is too short. You know, I want people who want to just get clean, move on, let's have fun. But what that means for me is just a person who's willing to own whatever their 50% is and whatever's going on with them. And that's been sort of a good rule of thumb for me. You know, whenever I'm having a tough time in a relationship, I will never take more than 50% responsibility, but I always try to take at least 50. You know, there's something that I've got that I've got to get accountable about. And when I do that, I am more capable of having a quiet mind. And I think it's in a quiet mind that is where my intuition cannot be. One of the reasons I stay sober and keep coming back to meetings is that I want to live in dreams coming true. That has been my life. I do come back to school and, you know, the thing about me being able to stay, you know, having a quiet mind and being able to say, I really want this. I really want this dream. Creating a private practice of, you know, being a therapist, helping people heal families and their marriages and stuff. It's my little contribution about, you know, ending violence, emotional, verbal, whatever. Then a couple years ago I even said, my life is so much about psychological and recovery stuff, I am so unbalanced. I closed my practice and I sold everything out and I moved to Paris. And I lived in Paris for a couple years. Didn't know any French, you know, just my typical, you know, way. I thought, all right, I'm going to do it. And had an amazing life here. And another private practice people, recovering people. So I really do believe that dreams come true when we are intuitively knowing how to handle situations. And when, you know, the issues are clean and clear enough that there's, what happens for me is I just feel a rush of energy that can focus on doing the next right thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where God does create, you know, me doing what I'm supposed to do this time around. So, you know, I think I think there's a sequence about these things, and I also think there's a circular nature, you know, that, you know, I get to live a dream come true, and then there's times where, for all different reasons, it's a time to take things apart, you know, it's a time when, there's times where things don't work, and what looks like failure is happening, and, you know, there's an empty place again, and I think that sobriety is about, you know, being grateful through both those times and just waiting for the direction to come again. And I just say that because I hate to paint a picture like, you know, you stay sober and everything is, you know, dreams and, you know, roses, and that is not true. There's a lot of dark places. But I'm just so grateful for having a